Need some motivation on your Chinese business endeavour? May be curious about what the Chinese business environment is all about? Or want to laugh out loud listening to war stories on the ground in China? Then this is your show, China Business Cast.
All right, thank you everybody for tuning in to another China Business Cast, episode 40. Can you believe it, Shlomo? 40 shows?
Yeah, it's already 15 episodes together.
Definitely, it's great. And it's a holiday where I don't know if there's people all traveling outside of China, but it's Dragon Boat Festival as we make this recording, and it'll be going live tomorrow, which is still a holiday. I think it's Thursday, Friday, Saturday is Dragon Boat Festival. And the crazy thing about China is they make people work on Sunday to kind of like adjust to holidays. So I think today, Thursday is the actual holiday, but they are making it a 3-day holiday by making Sunday Friday.
A work day.
But
specifically this week, Sunday is a Jewish holiday, so I'm not working.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's crazy how at least for me in the US, they don't change weekends to work days. So it's pretty crazy they do that.
Yeah, it's pretty unique in China.
And you're back in Israel now, right?
Yeah, I'm just back. Came back yesterday from a visit in Hong Kong, seeing you, and China as well.
Yeah, so I'm down here in the Philippines. It's not for a holiday. It's a working trip, but I have a partner in a SEO company here, so I'm just catching up with the team and seeing how things are going, and it's just so hot here. The sun is just like on top of me, so it's amazing.
I hope you're not working outside.
Indoors. Actually, no windows in this room, so it's nice and cool. And so we had a great time in Rise conference last week. It's amazing. It's only been a week, right? Seems like
it's been like much longer,
right? So much has been happening. So did you have a good time in Hong Kong or at the conference?
I had a great time. It was really, really nice meeting a lot of people. I went to two drinking nights, which were awesome. And again, meeting a lot of people there and also friends and partners and clients. So it was really, really good. And one of the things that I enjoyed the most actually was doing our interview at Brink, which is an IoT accelerator. And this was the first time that Mike and myself did an interview or a China Business Cast in person. So that was an interesting experience, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, and Nick, he'll be on an upcoming show, I think our next episode 41, and he was having fun too. He's got experience doing this stuff, but it was really great to. It was like I felt like a whole week conference. That is such a massive conference, right? I mean, you've been to a few other big conferences in Asia. I mean, what would you say?
I would say that the one I can compare that I know the most is GMIC in Beijing, and must say that one is that GMIC is actually much larger, but it's very, very different. It's like two different crowds. GMIC is more for the big companies in China and, you know, announcing new technologies and things like that. And I still think that if you really want to know at the core what's happening on the Chinese tech industry, you should go to that one. While Rise, now that I've been there, is very international, and it's more for smaller companies looking for investors, kind of, you know, look for new technologies, things like that. So I think it's two different crowds, two different atmospheres.
Yeah, I haven't been to GMIC, but I could imagine the difference. So yeah, I was in Hong Kong, and it definitely had a lot of people from international markets. So it was pretty awesome. And we also, we met some China Accelerator mentors and some other things too. And
it was three or four very hectic days.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely. An announcement I want to make is that we are opening a WeChat group for China Business Cast. This is going to be kind of a pilot. We really want to connect more with our users. And we're going to put all the kind of instructions of how exactly it's going to work on the website and also on the WeChat group itself. But we're going to put a QR code so you can join that group. And the purpose of that is ahead of shows, you'd be able to discuss the different topics that we're going to bring in there and ask our interviewees the questions that you're interested in, and then we're going to ask them for you on the show, so then you can hear it at the recording. Of course, we probably can't put all of them in, but we're going to put the best ones, and it's going to be more, let's call it social. There'll be not only me and Mike bringing the questions, also you guys. So go into the website, scan the QR code, and join the WeChat group.
Cool. I'm looking forward to connecting with people there.
All right.
And now I think we finished all, had a lot of announcements this time, but now that we've finished all of that, we have a really interesting show, Sam Goodman, right? We had a fun interview with Sam.
Definitely.
And yeah, he was a mentor at China Accelerator, and I connected with him in Beijing, and you've also connected with him in the past in the startup community too. So he's always so helpful, and it was great to get him on the show. And it's a very diverse interview, I'd say, right? We talked about restaurant experiences in China, differences with SMEs and MNCs for coming into the Chinese market. I mean, he's a China veteran, so it's really a pleasure to get him on the show.
Experience.
Yeah, so much experience. So without further ado, I think let's just jump right into Sam.
Let's jump in.
Okay, thank you everybody for tuning in to another China Business Cast. It is getting hot here in the south of China, and we were just mentioning we have a pretty international call or recording today. We have Sam Goodman, which is a good friend of ours up in Beijing. How you doing, Sam?
Hello, hello. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And Shlomo over in Israel. So
hey.
And then I'm down here in the south and Hong Kong today. So it's great to be able to use technology, internet to get us all together. So Sam Goodman, we met many years ago. You're always so helpful with, you know, entrepreneurs and startups in China. And you gave us some advice about, I was in a China Accelerator program, and I always appreciated that. And I always loved your talk and your stories. So we met a few times, and you have decades of experience here in China, doing tons of different kinds of ventures. So I was almost overwhelmed trying to prepare for today of which focus, because there's so much. So thank you for being here, Sam.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Always good to share horror stories so people can make new mistakes and try to avoid the China rookie mistakes.
And then regulations change.
Yeah. All this change is always. Okay. So I guess I think of, for some reason, maybe it was when we had our session talking, you were talking about your restaurant experience in China. Is that like, would you say one of your specialties of many?
Well, I guess, okay. So quick background. I came to China in 1995. I had been in Hong Kong for a year, 93, and then I went to Korea for a year, 94. I came in 95 really to learn the language. And when I was there, I had no place to hang out, and somebody made a comment about, well, why don't you shut up and do something about it? And so I set up a cafe, and that did fairly well. And so we opened up another one and another one. And after a few years, we had 5 locations, a central kitchen, corporate catering, 100 plus staff, about $1 million in revenue. And that was great. I really enjoyed the food and beverage industry for a number of years. I enjoyed it for 5 years. I was in it for 7. So around the 5th year, I said, you know what? I don't want to be an F&B guy for the rest of my life. And so I systemized myself out of a job and ended up exiting the company at the end of 2003. After that, just got married, and my wife basically said, please don't set up another startup. And so I did some due diligence for a Canadian investment fund, and we convinced them not to come to China because they weren't China ready. And then I then ended up getting hired by a recruitment firm because they couldn't help me out as an entrepreneur, but they could. They thought I'd be a pretty good recruiter. So I did that for 2 years, which is very interesting, just to get my first real look on life as in the corporate environment. Recruitment wasn't really for me, although it was an enjoyable experience, and I did fairly well. I had like a 95% closure rate. I can go on about that, but again, it's just as an entrepreneur helping people do businesses in China from just a straight talent acquisition perspective, that was pretty cool. And of course, being able to interview all the CEOs and what they're going through, and how similar it was to my own venture at, you know, at Beijing Sammy's, which is the name of the cafe. I did that for a couple of years. I knew it wasn't really for me, and I'm a huge fan of following your bliss. Life is pretty short, so if you're going to be doing something for, you know, 8 to 10 hours a day, you damn well better like it. So after doing that for 2 years, I was recruited to help Westinghouse with their nuclear power plant negotiations, which, you know, after making sandwiches, it was a bit of a jump. But that was a very incredible experience, simply because how similar the issues that I had, you know, making sandwiches and dealing with the small government agencies in China, how that totally applied to the larger Chinese agencies. Certainly, there's a lot more numbers or zeros behind each, you know, negotiation we're dealing with. But, you know, just dealing with the individuals as you know, as the people, because ultimately when you're doing business, it's about people, how connected and how similar that all was. So I did nuclear power plant negotiations and helped them build the team after we won that. After that, I, you know, my scope got smaller and smaller as we hired people. So I went back to my entrepreneurial roots and I started doing Web 2.0 stuff in about 2007. And I thought that was just much more scalable than making sandwiches. And so I was involved in, I guess, the tech industry from 2007 till fairly recently. I did a web startup, and then the economic crisis of 2008 enabled me to not do that and basically say, look, all the stuff that we've been working on, we ended up giving the entire platform to a green tech startup. They were doing NGO stuff, and so I helped them out for a couple of months, and then I was hired by another clean tech startup, also Web 2.0 stuff, and so that was, you know, along the lines of carbon, you know, sequestering and carbon credits. And once it became more carbon credits, I was like, okay, I don't really like that whole financial model. So I ended up leaving that. I wrote a book during that time and did some touring in the States and whatnot, promoting the book Where East Eats West, which is basically, you know, China rookie mistakes is what I'd call it. In order to help people basically not make these really simple mistakes, but make more advanced ones. These are the easy ones. So after the book, I then did more social media focus. And the venture I just finished up with was called Attract China. And we were helping Western brands attract Chinese travelers. And the Chinese travelers, we started that in 2000 and about 2000, I want to say 11 or 12. And then by 2013, the Chinese had become the most prolific travelers, spending the most money, and that business took off. So that was good. And now I'm reinventing myself again and getting into impact investment, basically helping great technologies that either help the environment or help individuals, working with impact investment funds in the U.S. and overseas to basically bring their China-ready products, whatever's in their portfolio, into China. Because a lot of these companies, they have what I would call a China-ready product, but they don't have a China-ready team. And then myself and my partners, we become that China-ready team. So I don't have to worry about the tech per se, and they don't have to worry about this market. We all get to play to our strengths. So
Sam, with all this experience, and it's surely, you know, it's might say all over the place, but not really. What are the kind of clients that you currently work with? You mentioned the clean tech, but you also, is this for a particular company? You also work for smaller ones, taking different projects for different other areas?
Yes. So all of my stuff had either startups or cross-border, not mergers and acquisitions, but really market entry and market expansion. And so some of the things I've done things with farm projects, et cetera, et cetera. So smaller stuff, but it's always been cross-border work where the Chinese want to go abroad and the foreigners want to go expand the China market. So that's where my focus has mainly been. And it's not been, aside from Westinghouse, it's been a lot more what I would call mid-cap companies. So they're past profitability. Some of them are startups. I've done consulting for that, but I'd say my sweet spot is not the 0-to-1 position, which I've done myself, but it's really taking a concept that's been proven in another market and then expanding it here. That's not an actual, I guess, industry focus. While I've done food stuff, I don't focus on food and beverage anymore, except for going to restaurants when I'm hungry. It's been, it's right now the focus is on health and wellness and climate change technologies.
Okay. Well, maybe this question is not relevant now, but I still remember in our chats in the past about, Beijing Sammy sounds very interesting. So it was a bootstrap venture where you were just kind of finding a need and fulfilling it and growing it organically, or?
Sure. I mean,
do you want to maybe share some of the?
Happy to. All of this stuff, most of this is in, we're East, East, West. Anybody, feel free, guys, to go to Amazon, get that. I think it's like $2 for each book. But
okay, cool. We'll link it up. We'll link it up on the notes too.
Outstanding. We'll sell thousands of books. Woo. So Beijing Sammy's was my first venture. And as I said, I was a student at the time. And, back in, 1995, there was not many food choices. You had Chinese food. You had some Korean food, but it was very, very limited. And so the need was very personal. Friends of mine, we would kind of come together and say, okay, I don't want to eat Chinese food. You get some bread. I'll get some, some cheese, and you get some vegetables, and we'll, meet back in 20 minutes and we'll make sandwiches. And you had to go to 3 different places to buy all the different things. And then we would, just make that. So the initial idea was, one of my buddies was an Australian, and he used to call them Sammies, like a chicken Sammy or a veggie Sammy. And so when I said I was going to, make a cafe, he's like, oh man, you gotta call it Beijing Sammies. And that was it. And then the initial market was the students at the Language Institute where I was. And that's where my first location was literally right outside one of the gates. And we opened for business. And I mean, it was completely bootstrapped. I had no idea what I was getting into. I mean, I was overflowing with ignorance. And 25 at the time, I figured, how hard could food and beverage be? I've been eating all my life. I know what food is about. We started with not enough money. And, by all accounts, we really should have been out of business, in the first 3 months. Most startups go under, within 6 months. When I started, I didn't have enough money to pay for the sign that was outside. I think we had a month and a half of working capital. But luckily, other than myself, quite a few other people were kind of tired of eating Chinese food 24/7, and so we did all right. And
do you have Chinese clients or only Westerners?
At the very, very beginning, I didn't even think to market to the Chinese. There was just, I was just getting started, and there were enough students literally a stone's throw away. And I didn't have to explain to them, what is a brownie? What's a cappuccino? Because this is before Starbucks came to China. So trying to explain to somebody, we would have Chinese come in and goes, do you have any Chinese food? We're like, no. Do you have any rice? We're like, no. And they're like, well, I won't eat rice. I'm like, well, there's 45,000 restaurants you could probably go other than here. But, it took a while. So, when we first started, it was just the foreigners. And that was cool because, very soon, 2 to 3 months, you'd have the Chinese innovators are like, what are these foreigners doing over here? And why are they hanging out? And there seems to be an awful lot of them. So then you'd have your trickle of, Chinese coming in. And then in the second year, the entire street got torn down. And so we ended up moving inside the campus to a much larger location. And then the Chinese students started, you got more and more of them. But I mean, at the very, very beginning, it was like, look, just have one target market, just go for them. And once that was, saturated, then we started thinking of other stuff. And by the time, a few years later, we had a central location, a central kitchen downtown in the San Leyton area, for anybody who knows. And we would deliver you know, to all the Fortune 500 companies throughout the CBD, the Central Business District in Beijing. We had delivery, and then we, from the delivery, we could see where we should be opening up locations where we had lots of people ordering. And so we then, opened up a location, another one. And by the end of my run, it was definitely, 60, 70% Chinese and 30, 40, depending on the location, of foreigners. But that was, that was years later.
Interesting. I want to get back to your, not your ventures, but your work with other companies. And sure. When you're mentioning small, medium enterprises versus multinationals regarding the China market entry, just like you said in the intro, what is the difference in the conversation and what they're mentioning, their problems? Can you give any example of that?
Sure. So with multinationals, much bigger team, much more resources. And because of that, the people you talk to are much more focused on what is their mandate. When you're looking at small to medium-sized enterprises, you tend to be dealing with the founder or the CEO, the entrepreneur, what have you. And so the discussion is very different, because when you're dealing with the HR manager for, Westinghouse, they don't care, or they don't have to care about, anything other than the HR issues. And so the conversations are definitely much more focused when dealing with the multinationals. And again, with the entrepreneurs, you're more general, and you're like, you're going to have to watch out for A, B, C, D, E, F, G, because these are the issues that you're going to have. This is what typical issues and problems, challenges, what have you, that people are having when they come to China. And when you bring somebody over, this is what you're going to have to look out for. So it's a very different conversation. And the whole idea with the book, Where You See Us, it was really written for entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs, we've got way too much going on. We don't have time for, long-winded stories. Just here's my problem, give me the answer, and let's move on. And so, each chapter is like 2-3 pages, and just here's the point, bang. And that was really inspired by Harvey McKay's books and Jack Welch's. I mean, it's just like really pithy, and here's the point. And that's all I wanted. And that's the major difference.
Okay. Really, really cool. So maybe focusing on the smaller businesses or maybe even like micro startups, you probably see a lot of these people coming and going quite frequently here in Beijing and other parts of China. Yeah. So I guess I have my idea, and I'm just curious your perspective. What do you think of a foreign bootstrapped startup in China? Maybe as a kind of a second part of the question, if you want to answer it separately, is, maybe there's some that try to do it from like the US or from overseas, like, online, versus those that maybe jump on a one-way ticket here and try to do it. So maybe they're, of course, they're different. So I don't know if you want to handle that separately or.
Okay. These are great questions. I'll do my best. And if I get off topic, just reel me back in. First off, startup mistakes, young entrepreneurs, certainly not limited to China. I made a ton of, rookie mistakes. And, when someone called me an entrepreneur, I was like, oh yeah, I better figure out what that means. And, I started doing some homework and, reading the top 10 mistakes, entrepreneurs make. And I was like, oh yeah, I've checked all those boxes. So that happens a lot, just not just a China issue, but just, first time entrepreneur, this is what I think it's going to be. And then, that's what it really is. So there is that. And I don't think it's necessarily China centric. Foreigners coming to China to set up a business, it's very different in the sense that, first off, China is a really, really big place. So, coming to Beijing in 1995 is very different now. China's got, geographically, it's bigger than all of Europe. So they have different levels of their cities. You got first tier cities and second tier cities, all the way to like sixth tier cities. And their level of development or how cosmopolitan are they, differ a tremendous amount. So Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, these are what are considered first tier cities, and they've got a tremendous amount of history with foreign brands. And, to come to these locations as a traveler, you're going to be like, oh, I recognize all these brands. But if you were to go to a sixth tier city, you're going to be really hard pressed to find anything really that you recognize, unless you're talking about, you know, Colgate in some of the stores. But I mean, it's a very, very different landscape depending on where you're landing. And so if you're a foreigner who wants to set up a startup in China, first and foremost, you should come and learn the language, which if you're going to invest anything, I would highly, highly, highly recommend coming to China, not in one of the first tier cities, and spending about a year. I mean, it's not going to be an easy year because you're going to struggle through it, but it is absolutely a year well spent. You're going to, first off, you're going to learn the language, and you're going to know the culture so much better. You know, through that year of struggle, you're just going to gain a tremendous amount of insight that you would not have had if you think you're going to plop down into China and you're going to make it work. You are so not going to do that. I've just seen so many people come in and say, this is what's going to happen, and this is how it works. And 6 months later, they're on a plane back home. China is not for the faint of heart, for sure. So trying to do China from remote just does not work. I mean, at the end of the day, you might be able to import, like get somebody to make some stuff for you and bring it in. But if you're going to have any true connection to China, you're going to have somebody who's on the ground. And if you think that you're going to, you know, manage them from remote, you know, I can give you chapters 5 through, you know, 85 on why that's not going to work. And it's just, again, it's like people make the same mistakes over and over again. So you won't be the first person to make the mistakes. Probably won't be the last. But again, it's highly unlikely. I've yet to see somebody succeed by doing a remote China play.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think
regulations change
at least
well.
Spend some time here.
Regulations. Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's so much. Well, I mean, there's well, many sayings. One is if you're working with a Chinese partner, you're like sharing the same bed but dreaming two different dreams. Bottom line is the Chinese have grown up in a different environment than, you know, a Westerner has. And because of that, everyone's got their own cultural biases. And because of that, you basically process information differently. And your perspective on things is just different. And because of that, you know, you're going to see the issues differently, and you're going to see what's good and bad about them differently. And again, if you don't have that insight, or if you don't have that closeness, you know, to talk with others, you can say the exact same thing and everyone's shaking their head. Yeah. Okay. Sure. But then, you know, very soon you're going to find out, oh, you were saying yes about A and I was saying yes about B, and they're two sides of the same coin, but the end result is very different.
But don't you think that because there are many, either ABCs or American born Chinese, or people who go for overseas studies and then after a few years going back to China, then it's, well, maybe somewhat easier because the culture gap is now a little smaller?
Not exactly. If anything, I've seen so many Haigui's, the Chinese that go abroad and spend, you know, 4 years or 10 years overseas, and, you know, they study abroad and they work abroad, and then they come to China thinking, hey, I'm born Chinese. I know China. But what they don't know is they don't know the work environment, the business, you know, the business culture, which is different from just culture. Again, I'm not qualified to talk about Chinese culture. I can talk about the business environment as a foreigner in China, with 20 plus years and, you know, having interviewed a number of other people who've done the same thing, but it's very different. And I mean, you still see it where the, you know, even the Chinese who've been abroad and come here, they think they know both, but they don't. And then, you know, the at least the foreigners know they don't know, but then there's a large amount of time necessary to kind of get your head wrapped around how things are done. For the Chinese who come back after working overseas for a number of years, think then that they've got everything because they were born Chinese and they speak Chinese, and then they've also worked overseas. They also find it even more difficult because there is a disconnect between the, you know, Western business practices and Chinese business practices, but their business experiences from overseas, so they don't have that China business experience, and that takes them time to, you know, you bang your head against, you know, a glass door a couple of times, and then you're like, oh, you know what, that's a door. So I didn't see it, but bang, you know, it leaves a mark.
Wow. So thanks, Dennis. It's been a really fascinating interview, and kind of getting towards the end. And, you know, you've been here, you're definitely a veteran. And I know this could be a huge answer, but is there any tips you could share for people that have those China days where they maybe can't handle it anymore? And do you just keep putting up
with
it?
I would have to say the most important thing, persistence is important. Having a sense of humor is absolutely mandatory. Being able to let go of frustration is a big thing. I still get, frustrated sometimes. I went to the Bank of China today and I got frustrated, but a minute later I'm like, okay, it's not that guy's rule that he you can't do this. So getting mad at him, it's not important. So letting that go is the frustration that inevitably comes is one thing. But the thing that helped me the best, somebody once said to me, if it's not going to bother you in a year, don't let it bother you now. And then another one was, you should be thankful every time you go and you have a bad China experience. You should be thankful, because if things were to be so, if this is a well-oiled machine and everything worked really well, there would be absolutely no space for us foreigners to do something different. So be thankful that, if someone's rude, or if there's, poor service, or something's not working, be thankful, because that shows that there's still room for improvement. And that's hopefully why you're here.
It's your opportunity.
Yeah.
Cool.
Got it. Okay. So we're towards the end of the show, and this is the part where you're telling our audience what's the best way to reach out to you. Everything that you can think of.
Everything you can think of. First thing, absolutely positively, first do your homework. Go, get where East eats West, because that'll explain a lot of stuff that I haven't gone over. And that's like a quick, cover to cover, 3 hours tops. So do your homework from that. And then for me, I'm on LinkedIn. So if anybody's got something interesting going on, I'm usually very open for students and whatnot. I don't do consulting so much anymore. I'm focused on my own businesses. But for a cup of coffee or whatnot, I'm happy you can pick my brains, at least the first time. After a while, then I'm like, well, that's another story. Yeah,
that works. Okay, Sam, thank you very much for your time. That was fascinating. And we don't have too many people who come to the show with 20 years of experience. So we really, really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Guys, if I can help you out, you just let me know and I'll do my best.
Well, thank you again, Sam.
Awesome. Thank you.
All right. Take care, guys.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
Doing business in China is a complex world. You can quickly feel alone and lost in its maze. But don't worry, China Business Cast is here for you. Sign up for our newsletter and regular updates on our website at www.chinabusinesscast.com. Thanks for tuning in.